All right, and finally, I have asked a dear friend to come up and introduce our speaker today.
I'm Kevin, an alcoholic. I have the pleasure of introducing an old friend. I met Aaron just shy of 30 years and 2 months ago. And she was a pistol then, she's a pistol now. God bless her, she was raised by me and her mother. And, you know, we did the best we could, but, you know, we were strong personalities and did our share of acting out, and Aaron got to witness that. You know, Aaron probably started using, I'm hoping to learn a little more about her story. About the time I got sober the second time. And I can tell you it was challenging to get sober again and watch your kids start using about the same time. And, you know, I didn't always handle that well. But I can tell you she's here now. Miracles do happen. You know, it wasn't but a few years ago. In my mind, she was on death's doorstep. And today she's raising a family and doing the next right thing, and she's sober. And, you know, that's a big deal. And as a guy who didn't do it right all the time, you know, I find ways to tell her how I think she ought to do it different than I did. And just like me, she bucks up and tells me to piss off occasionally. But, you know, we get along real well today. And I couldn't love her more. So, introducing Aaron. Aaron Kay.
Oh, God. my name's Aaron. I'm an addict and alcoholic.
Hey, Aaron.
And my sobriety date is May 18th, 2017. I want to respect the group I got sober in, so although alcohol was a constant throughout my story, there are a lot of drugs in my story, and that's the event. That's what brought me to my knees. A little bit about me. I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm the oldest of three. I have a younger brother and a younger sister. We moved here in 1997. My dad's job transferred us out here. I have some memories in Oklahoma. I remember going to an AA function early on. I didn't know it was an AA function until many years later. I remember some arguments that happened in the Oklahoma home. Fast forward, we moved here. I was in the middle of second grade. We moved into what I thought was a mansion. It was I shared a room with my sister in Oklahoma, and so I had my own bedroom here. And it had stairs. It was a two-story home. And it had rooms, like a dining room and a kitchen area. And it was a very nice home. I'm going to fast forward a little bit. I never felt like I had a hard time fitting in with people. I was pretty outgoing. I got along with most people. But I did always think that I was crazy. And I remember telling my mom that something was wrong with me, that my thinking was off. I was very angry and stubborn and bullheaded and willful and all of those things. And I didn't drink for the longest time because my mom was also an alcoholic. I witnessed probably in comparison to her and my father, I witnessed the most stuff with her. I don't have very many memories of my dad drinking or using. My mom was a closet drinker, so there was never alcohol in the home visibly. There was nothing ever in the refrigerator. We didn't have a liquor cabinet. We drank milk or water at dinner. But I do remember early on that any time she was drinking something, it was in a separate cup. It was never in the actual container it came in. And she brought it into the home in her purse or in some kind of bag that concealed it. I have a dresser. I have my mom's old furniture, and I still have it in my bedroom. And I have a, like, the tall, skinny dressers, and it has five drawers. And the third and fourth drawer look like they're separate, but they're not. It's a really deep drawer. And that was my T-shirt drawer growing up. And I never folded them. I just kind of threw them in there. And I remember the first time I found her alcohol in that drawer. And I put it back. I only saw it because I was digging for a particular shirt. You know, there were times when she would drink and my parents would argue. And, you know, I remember her at one point passing out in the hall closet. And I asked my dad, you know, what do we do? And he said, leave her in there. I picked her up. This was later on. I'm trying to tell a linear story, so please forgive me. Later on, I remember, you know, picking her up in places where she was too drunk to drive and taking her keys and getting her home. I think there was one instance where I think I had James help me with it. Let's fast forward to high school. So for the longest time, I did not drink because of her. And I would tell people if I was asked that I didn't want to be like her. And so, in a way, it kind of turned me off of drugs and alcohol until high school. In high school, I played sports before high school, and I continued to play sports in high school. I was sports editor of the yearbook. I was on homecoming court. I was in AAP and honors classes. So I didn't necessarily have one group I hung out with. I pretty much knew everyone, either with the class with them, or sports, or so on. I did start hanging out with some girls that were older than I was, and that is when I had this feeling of not fitting in or wanting to be cool. I remember, I think, the first time that I had a drink was after my 16th birthday dinner. My mom was always good about anything I wanted for my birthday, as far as if I wanted people to spend the night, if I wanted, one point we went to a hotel and all my girlfriends and I got to sleep in a hotel for my birthday. She would take us out to dinner and I get to pick the restaurant. She'd pick up the tab. So she facilitated a lot of that. And growing up, I never I had everything I needed and I didn't really want for anything. I was fairly spoiled. We went back to my house because after dinner they were going to sleep over, and I believe one of the girls that I was with, her boyfriend came over and brought alcohol. We were out in the front street of my house. My house was on a hill, so we were in the front street, and it was a Smirnoff Green Apple, and I didn't finish it. I didn't like it, and I didn't get drunk. At this point in time, my brother had started using and drinking, and he was kind of the focus in the household, so I flew under the radar in some regards. I also made really good grades, did well in school. I was active and participated, so I think that also gave me a bit of a pass with my parents. Remember in high school I would spend the night at girlfriend's house, and of course we weren't at their house. We would go out, and then I noticed at that time that when I did drink, I drank more than everybody else, and I was also kind of an alcohol snob, so I was the one that brought Grey Goose and Red Bull. And everybody else was drinking, you know, Natty Light and, you know, the cheaper stuff. And I would buy a ginormous bottle for no other reason than the fear of running out. And that it, I mean, it didn't interfere with my school. I graduated early from high school. I started working in a restaurant shortly before graduation, at a well-known restaurant in downtown Ackworth. I was a hostess. I ended up working there for 4 years. Again, I found myself in an environment where I was younger and I was hanging out with a lot of older people who were of the age where they could drink after we got off. And I would just hang out with them and smoke cigarettes. I graduated in 2017 and then walked in 2018. I didn't immediately start college until the rest of my class went to college. So at that time I worked full time at the restaurant and became even more immersed in that culture. I met my son's father while I was working there when I was 17. He's 5 years older than I am. And at this point, I had smoked weed in high school later on. And I remember my high school boyfriend, I found out that he had smoked weed, and I called him, and I was appalled, like disgusted with it. Couldn't believe that he didn't, but I want to know what he thought and how he felt on it. But it still, I was like, ugh, like, why would you do that? And so fast forward back to meeting my son's father. He was a habitual pot smoker. He smoked every single day. And so we were hanging out a lot, and I was doing the same. And I became a regular weed smoker. I was still working at the restaurant at this time, and I was over 18, so I was serving. And when I don't remember much drinking going on at that restaurant in particular, I worked there for almost 4 years. After I was let go from there, I went and helped open up a tavern that's behind this restaurant that I worked in Ackworth. It was the people that were opening, the owners I knew. And I was taken on as a lead server and to help kind of implement front of house responsibilities. There is when I started drinking more heavily, and I would not come home until late hours of the night. I would drink what I called a baby beer out of a rocks glass so that I could do the trick of the mind where I was not drinking like full beers, but I was, if I had two littles, then that would be a full, and then I just would never keep count. And I really never sipped, and I didn't ever mix. I drank things straight, and even then I noticed that I somehow never intentionally always got more drunk than everybody else. To the point of blacking out or becoming sick. If I did get sick, I'd excuse myself to the restroom and I'd come back like nothing happened. My son's father noticed at this point that I was getting out of hand. I was drinking more. The environment that I was in was not helping. Don't know if it was before or after, but at some point in time, I was working with my mom for a little while at another restaurant that's down the street in Ackworth, and I quit that job because she was working there, and we were, and she was drinking on the clock, and she would drink after the clock, and there was some talk around there, and it made me uncomfortable, so I quit. And then there were times when she would come over to my tavern when she got off, and she'd order from a beer. Now, that was probably the first time that I ever saw her drink something out of the bottle it came from, if that makes sense. So I left the tavern, and I went and worked at a restaurant in Smyrna and Vinings area where my son's father worked, and I got a job there. It was a very hoity-toity restaurant. They had liquor that I had never heard of. And wine and all kinds of nice fancy beers. And so, and we got a shift drink after the end of the shift. And I would always pick my beer based on the ABV, the alcohol content. So I usually scroll down and, oh, this Belgian has 13, that's the one. And whether or not I liked it, I didn't care. I got it down. In 2012, I became pregnant with my first son, and I stopped everything at that point. I was not able to completely put down cigarettes, but I stopped smoking weed. I didn't drink. I did nothing. I was so terrified. Even at the time when you are can have a glass of wine, I didn't partake. It just, I was so nervous. 2013, June of 2013, I delivered my first son. I was out of work for a little while with him, and again, there was no alcohol in the home. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't smoking. Nothing. Went back to work shortly after and dove right back in. I had the mentality that I deserved to drink. I had just been sober for 9 months, and I was at home with a baby all the time, so work became my outlet, and I hung out after work, and then I went to bars with people after work, and, you know, because Charlie was, which is my son's father, was at home with Avery, and so I took that as my my little break. Shortly after that, let me backtrack first. Let's go back to 2011, before Avery. I was arrested for the first time in 2011. It was January, and I got in a hit-and-run accident, and I didn't get rid of the stuff that was in my car, and I called the police on myself. And I was so arrogant, I guess, in that they weren't going to smell weed on me. And they were going to be more focused on the accident than the fact that I was high and I was carrying in my car. That wasn't the case. They didn't care about the accident. I called, and I think I called my mom, and she got my dad on the phone, and sent my dad over. And I didn't cooperate so nicely with them. It took them a little while to find my stuff. And at this point, my dad showed up right after they had found the stuff. And I don't know if he ever knew that, you know, when he got there, I think he wanted me to, he was trying to help me, wanted me to get in the car, put it in the car, just like, you know, and it was already, it was too late at that point. So the first time I was arrested in front of my dad. And, he followed me, he was not happy, he followed me up to the jail and got me out. I had a possession charge at that point. This was my first time being arrested, and it was in Cherokee County, so I went through a six-month diversion program. During that time, I was randomly drug tested, and so I couldn't smoke weed, which is what I had been doing every day for a few years now. And I'd heard about Spice. And at this point, it was fairly new on the market. You could buy it at head shops, and it gave me a head change, and it wasn't detectable in drug tests. And I started smoking Spice. As soon as I was done with that six-month probation period, I went back to smoking weed. So, sorry, we're jumping all over the place. So let's fast forward back to past Avery. And so Avery was born in June. I went back to work. And then I got arrested for my first DUI on my way home from work in November 21st, 2013. Less than a mile from my home. And I ended up getting... it dropped to reckless, and I was on probation, and I went through probation as instructed. With that came a lot of new rules at work, because I was at work, and I was with everybody, and we had opened bottles that were from the bar, and were drinking. well after we should have been gone. So there were new rules implemented at work because of my DUI arrest. At this point, I believe my grandfather passed away at some point around here, and we went to Oklahoma. I did introduce my sister to Spice, and I introduced her to weed. So at this point, I've been out of the house since 2018 or 2008, and living with my son's father. I knew that my sister was smoking Spice and had been smoking Spice. When my parents divorced, my mom and sister moved into an apartment, and that is when I believe my mom became addicted to Spice as well. When we went out to Oklahoma for my grandfather's funeral, it was me, my brother, my sister, my mom, me, and Avery. And we stayed in a very nice hotel, had separate rooms so that they could do their stuff in their room, and me and Avery could have our own room. I ended up on that trip smoking Spice with them. At this point, my brother was also addicted to Spice at this time, so I was the only one that was not doing Spice. And I wanted to be a part of my own family. And my sister and my mom were always very close. I was closer with my dad. And I was jealous of that. I wanted to be able to hang out with them, be able to, you know, do what they did and, you know, connect with them. And they stayed away from me, or if I saw my mom, it was for brief periods of time where she wasn't messed up or she had to leave quickly. She'd drop something off and tell me she loved me and leave so that she could go get high. And so I didn't see her much. She also spent, after her parents passed away, she spent an awful lot of time in Oklahoma. I remember at one point her coming over, and I hadn't quite realized what was going on. And I complimented her on her weight. She looked good. She had lost weight. She was thin. She looked like she was taking care of herself. And she wasn't. And I didn't know. I smoked when we were out on this trip in Oklahoma. When I got home, I didn't have any, and I didn't do it. In 2015, over the summer, I got pregnant with my second son. And I was, I think I was almost 19 weeks, and I woke up in the middle of the night to blood in the bed, and I rushed to the hospital, called my dad over, and he took care of Avery while we went to the hospital. And I ended up delivering a stillborn son, and I tried to be too strong. I wouldn't let anybody come to the hospital with my dad to see me. He took care of Avery. He ended up cleaning the sheets and getting rid of everything before we got home. And I remember a card he gave me while we were in there. And it basically said, don't be too strong, Aaron. And I didn't heed any of the warnings. And the doctor even told me that my reaction to everything was off. I handled it too well. At this point, I had gone back to school, and I was in school full time. I took off a week from school and 2 weeks from work. That kind of pushed me into October, and then, you know, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas. So I kept myself fairly busy, dove back into work like nothing happened, and finished school with 3 A's and a B. Made it through the holiday season, and it was kind of after that point everything settled in, everything slowed down, and weed just wasn't cutting it for me. I couldn't drink enough, and I couldn't smoke enough, and I didn't want to feel. I was enrolled again in the next semester. I had a laptop that I had had for way too many years. It was, and it had died on me. So I started going over to my mom's house at this point to use her laptop for schoolwork. I would go over after Avery went down at night, and then I was, you know, to be there to do complete schoolwork and head home. And at that point is when I started using with my mom. And so every night I would, you know, rush Avery to bed. I'd tell Charlie, I gotta go, homework, you know, assignments, da da da, whether I had him or not, I needed to go over there. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed hanging out with my mom. I enjoyed that she didn't have to hide anything from me, that it wasn't quick visits here and there, that it wasn't, that we could sit and we could talk, and I felt like she enjoyed being around me, and it made me feel good. It made me feel good. And I very quickly, at this point, we're in January of 2016, very quickly, I was addicted, and I found myself staying over later than I should, coming home messed up, not getting enough and having to go back over in the middle of the night. And the insanity that went along with that. I mean, my Charlie at this point didn't know anything. I would crack the garage so I could get on the ground and open the garage, get underneath the garage. My mom had two vehicles at this time, one being a Prius. My car worked fine, but I would borrow her car. Because it was so quiet and I could get out of the driveway. And I would drive over to the house at night. She always left the doors unlocked, and I would go in the house and I would grab what I needed, and I would head back to my home. I would wake up early in the morning and try to get, as soon as Charlie went to work really early, so I had a few hours to myself before I absolutely had to get Avery up into preschool. And I would wake up to ensure that I got as high as possible before I had to get him to school. I hung out at his school a lot. It was a very nice private school that my mom paid for. And I would try to hang out as long as they would let me in his room with him and hang out and interact with the kids and whatnot. High as shit. But I didn't want, it was my safe space. Like, I couldn't bring anything in there I couldn't use while there, and I would use that as an excuse to keep me from getting high, because it was going to happen as soon as I got in the car, and I carried everything with me always. And so I did that for a little while, and you know, looking back, I knew exactly what it was. And Charlie even mentioned, you know, why do you hang out at the school so often? I'm like, well, you know, because I enjoy it. And it was a lie. I enjoyed it, but it was ultimately to keep me from not using for a small period of time. So I used with my mom. And at this point, I don't think my brother was using anymore. Francis was still using. And my sister supplied my mother supplied me. I became very frustrated with that situation because Francis always had it, my mom always had it because my mom bought it, and I didn't always have it. So I remember a lot of arguments and frustration and being very sick because they made sure they recovered, not always me. And I needed to keep it up because if I didn't have it, Charlie would know, and I would get sick, and I couldn't explain it. So in May of 2016, my house that we were in, the house beside it opened up, and I moved my mom in next door. at this point, all I had to do was walk next door. And I told myself I was keeping an eye on her, and there was truth in that, but I had also an ulterior motive. I would hang out at the house. Our washer broke, and I would use, you know, I put off fixing the washer so I could have an excuse to go to my mom's house to do laundry so I could get high. I spent a lot of time over there. I left Avery at the house by himself sometimes. I remember one story in particular where I just felt like shit when I got home because he wasn't feeling well. I thought I had got him down to bed so I could sneak off next door. And when I got home, the bathroom light was on, and above our toilet was a medicine cabinet. And he apparently had got on the toilet, opened the medicine cabinet, and was trying to find himself medicine, and he couldn't get it open, but it was sitting on the toilet, and he had gone back to bed. And I walked in, and I saw this, and, you know, I wasn't there, but I knew what had happened. I drove around with him, high in the car. I smoked in the car with him. I fell asleep at red lights with him. I've gotten in multiple accidents, all related to spice. I couldn't use it at my house, so I used it in my car. And I drove everywhere for no reason. I take the long way home. I take the long way to his school. I would sit in parking lots. And it was becoming, at this point, I believe Charlie had figured out in April, and I had... He'd come outside and wondered why I wasn't in bed, and I was in my car, and I had nodded off, and he woke me up, and it was in my hand, and I was caught flat-footed. And so at this point, he kind of knew what was up, but, and I would, you know, I would tell him that I would quit, and I would cry in the shower, and I would not get me and throw everything away, and, you know, and he kept an eye on me, and I had to be sneakier, and not even sneakier. I just, if I didn't come home, then be pissed because I didn't come home, but you didn't know what I was doing. At this point in time, our relationship was falling apart. I was served with custody papers in October of 2016. He wanted primary custody of our child. And at this point, he had moved out of the home. He had taken Avery with him. And he told me I could see Avery as long as I came over sober. And I didn't come over. There was at one point in time that I did come over. He was going to, you know, he said he'd take my keys and he'd stay at the house and we'd, you know, get through this together, and I lost it. I freaked out and I left. Ended up breaking that lease and getting out early. My dad came over and helped me get out of that whole house and cleaned it with me and met with the landlord and was very patient throughout the whole thing. Also, when I popped any tires from, you know, getting too close to a curb, when I was too high, I'd call him and he'd come and help me with my car. And he knew I was messed up. And he'd say something, but, you know, just kind of, in a way, let it be. So at this point, I was out of that house and I moved back in with him. I was ordered through court and the custody stuff to complete a one-year outpatient program. Very rigorous. AA meetings, counseling, 9 hours a week. I was told that I needed to go to Ridgeview and do trauma therapy and some other things that went along with that. My original sobriety date was October 18th, right around the time I got served with the papers and I came in here. Shortly after, in December, started hanging out with a gentleman that was in my outpatient group. He and I started hanging out more frequently, and he wanted more than I was able to give at that point. I remember in February, being at the home at my townhouse at this point, and a lot of he told me something and I told him to take it back, and he wanted to be in a relationship and I wasn't able to do it at the time, and he left that night upset, and I tried to get a, you know, I let it go for the night, and I tried to get a hold of him the following day, and I text back from his dad through his phone because he wasn't answering my calls, and that was very unusual, and no text, and I was apologizing for not necessarily handling myself the right way, and his stepdad texted me back and told me that he had overdosed, and I felt like shit, and I blamed myself for a while there that he was fragile. I didn't notice that he was sick. He wasn't doing what he needed to do, and yet I couldn't see that. I couldn't help him. I couldn't get him sober, and I was having some same feelings that, and this was around 4 months of me being sober the first time, that I couldn't do with my mom. So I feel like yet again, I can't help someone that needs help. And now I'm sober, so, you know, I'm qualified to do it. And so he was from Illinois, so his family was heading up to Illinois for his funeral. I was invited, and I had planned on going. I had gotten a hold of some GHB through a friend that did not know that I had gotten hold of it from him, so I stole it from him, and I put it in a little cup, and it was just going to sit with me. I knew, you know, at this point I wasn't smoking spice. I had relapsed and was drinking alcohol, but I knew that I'd be, you know, screwed if I had open containers in the car, and if I was caught at any point in time, that would have been 3 and less than 5, and that was a no-go. So my alcoholic addict mind thought, well, I mean, GHB is clear, it'll look like water, you know, I can do this. I get a satisfaction from an empty glass. There's very rarely am I able to leave alcohol in a cup. And I had that same mindset with the GHB. And I remember being on the phone with my dad and talked to him shortly, briefly, to cut it short, get off the phone. And I downed the last of that, and I don't remember not a thing else after that. I woke up in the hospital, and I think I was being put in a MRI machine or the tunnel machines, and I woke up and had no idea where I was, what happened, and I remember crying hysterically for my mom. At this point in time, they had already gotten hold of my best friend, and I believe my dad, and he was on his way up to the hospital and was there very quickly after. I refused the blood test because that was just kind of what I did. I refused everything, and I didn't care what the consequences were, but no breathalyzers, nothing. I knew at that point that if I didn't submit to the blood screen that, oh my gosh, I'm not going fast enough. If I didn't submit to the blood screen that I would be arrested. So my dad pulled the officer outside and somehow sweet talked him to come back in and give me another chance, and I gave a blood screen. At this point in time, an emergency hearing was called for my probation stuff. I was put on supervised visitation until the blood work came back. When it came back, it was clean, and I was taken off supervised visitation. That happened in February of 2017. In May, I was on supervised visitation at this point. It was Mother's Day, and Charlie, my son's father, was the supervisor that day. We met at a park. He hung his hammock up a few yards away. and me and Avery colored and hung out and rode his bike in the parking lot and spent, you know, our couple hours together. With all of this that had just happened, I still couldn't get clean. I was going to my car to get high and trying to be sneaky and knowing that all that was at stake at this point. For whatever reason, it was not me because I didn't do anything different that day, and I had, but for whatever reason, and I do believe that it was God, that when I got home after that, something came over me, and I was done. I was going to be done smoking. I got rid of everything. I probably completed everything that day and then got rid of it the following morning, and I detoxed at my home by myself. And then I came to a meeting on the 18th. And I believe Mother's Day was 14th. At this point in time, we were still in custody case. I came in and something was different this time. There was a willingness. I wasn't... throughout, even now, I've not completed the steps. I am working with a sponsor now, but the majority of my time clean, I have not. I don't recommend that. For whatever reason, it's worked for me, and that's part of my story. I talk to my dad daily. He is in the program, so I think sometimes, you know, he's taken on sponsorship roles and a lot of that. I missed a big part. So, in 2017, after I was 4 months clean, when I got clean that time, I also knew that I was making a decision to get clean. I was going to try to get Avery back, be a productive parent, at least get joint custody. And I had to stop talking to my mom. I couldn't be around her. I couldn't come. I had to cut all ties with her. She was my using buddy, and she was the one that gave it to me. And so in September of 2017, September 6th, I got a call from my sister early in the morning telling me that my mom had passed away in her sleep. And I was devastated. I couldn't... I treated that woman so bad towards the end, and the things I said, and I didn't treat her like a sick friend. I was more compassionate to you guys in the room than I was to her, and I ultimately couldn't save her, and the drug that I was getting clean from is what killed her. And so I think some of that also comes into play with my sobriety. Because I don't want to let her down. And for whatever reason, she didn't get it. And I was given the chance to. So I feel like I would be doing her a disservice if I didn't stay sober. Because I've been given the opportunity, and I do think that she had the opportunity. I just don't think she had the willingness, and I don't think she wanted to. And so when she passed away the day before my birthday, and my sister, at this time, like I said, we had cut ties, and I wasn't talking to her, and my sister told me that my mom was trying to get clean and she was trying to get off. And she told Frances, my sister, that for my birthday, she wanted to be sober. And in that regard, I do think that was a God thing. Because even though she wasn't here, she was technically sober for my birthday. And... that was, at this point, I was about 4 months sober. Because I was sober, I had the opportunity of
throwing her a funeral, orchestrating a funeral for her. I was executor of her estate, still tying up some things with that. But I couldn't have done that if I was messed up. And I, you know, today I get to, I don't have to wake up in the middle of the night searching for a pipe in my bed. I don't have to wake up first thing and get high. I don't have to drink to the point where I shouldn't be driving or I can't walk or I'm having to pull over on the way home to throw up or, you know, I just drank at work and now I'm going to the bar and they know me so they line up 3 shots for me. As soon as I get in there, I pound them and I head home. And I get to be a mom and I get to forgive myself because I couldn't do that for a really long time. And I get to forgive myself for acting imperfect in imperfect situations. And I get to handle other people that are struggling different than I handled my mom. And I get to do a living amends for that, because I didn't get to apologize and I didn't get to. And then, you know, I came in here and a bunch of you were here that day on my birthday, September 7th, 2017. And it was a gratitude meeting because it's, or it was a resentments meeting, a meeting because it was September. And I fell apart because I felt like a shitty person because I didn't get to make amends. And I have a lot of, it was an amends meeting, not a resentments meeting, sorry. And you know, now I have a 6-year-old son that I get to be present. I get to go to functions. I get to wake up and get him dressed in the morning. He doesn't ask me why my eyes are rolling in the back of my head. We don't get honked out because I'm asleep at a red light. I get to be a fiance that's present and that, you know, spends time with someone without alcohol and drugs being the thing that brought us together and that keeps us together. You know, my son's been here. He doesn't come as often anymore. I try to respect his father's wishes in regards to that. But, you know, he's aware of the program and he knows what my meetings are for and he's, you know, and he knows that they're to make, I tell him, you know, they make mommy a better mommy. And, you know, his response to me is, but I already think you're a good mommy. And that's enough. And now I have a 4-month-old daughter that I hope, by the grace of God, that never has to see me high or drunk. And that I get to do it right. I get to make up for my failings of Avery in her. And I'm, you know, I try to be of service to others. I think I'm a better sister. I think I'm a better daughter. I think, you know, I filter half of what I say now instead of nothing. So it's still progressing. you know, just a quick, you know, shout out to someone that's been instrumental in all this is my dad. And, he's always been there. He's more like my best friend than my father. Sometimes we get in arguments most of the time and we talk all the time and I take out most of my stuff with him and on him. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, we don't have a normal relationship. It's not a father-daughter relationship. I think it's more complicated than that is. Sometimes I wish it was just father-daughter, but I appreciate that it's not. He's talked to me on the phone when I wasn't listening, when I was nodding out, when I fell asleep. He's talked to me when I've been messed up. He's helped me in every situation possible. He's been my supervisor when I was on supervised visitation. He's come with me to my attorney's offices. He's given me a place to stay when I didn't have one. He's picked me up on the side of the road. He's done, you know, he's talked program with me when I wasn't willing to hear it from anybody else. Calls me on my bullshit often. And he really has been a big part, and I don't ever want to go back to the way it was, because this is far better, and I wouldn't want to let him down. So, the end.